Hey, Cam, mind sending me over our new Wi-Fi password?
Oh, sorry, Mitch, you can't be trusted.
What?
It's your phone. It's different than mine.
Cam! And I thought I was a judgy one.
No, it's just messages between different devices aren't encrypted.
Okay. Since when do you know about encryption?
I know what encryption is, and it's because I'm the last line of defense against any would-be Wi-Fi thieves.
Cam, come on.
Okay, fine. I'll send it somewhere more private.
Thank you.
Safely send messages between different devices. On WhatsApp. Message privately with everyone.
Welcome to the Multifamily Zone, where business meets family. We explore what the entrepreneur life looks like from the family perspective. Now, here are your hosts, Julia and Gino Barbaro.
Hey, everyone. This is Julia Barbaro, host of the Multifamily Zone podcast. I'm here with the co-founder of Jake and Gino, my co-host and husband, Gino Barbaro.
You see that? Yeah. You nailed it. I didn't look at you. You know what? This is going to be an amazing podcast today. The Franciscan Friars have really had an amazing and tremendous effect on my life going back to 2003, 2004. We're going to be promoting this book, Habits of Holiness, on this podcast today. It's an awesome book. Just finished reading it. I want to introduce Father Mark Mary. He's been an ordained Franciscan Friar of the Renewal since 2018. The mission of the CFRs is to wholeheartedly embrace Jesus through fidelity to the church and her sacraments. Paired with their commitment to prayer, contemplation, and the study of sacred scripture, the CFRs serve those around them, especially the poor, in the footsteps of Christ. Without further ado, Father Mark Mary, welcome to the
show.
Hello, hello, hello. Great to be with you.
I bet the first question is, would you ever imagine being on a show with Gino and Julie on a podcast? Could you ever imagine that?
I would not have ever thought about this, but I wouldn't imagine myself being on doing any of this, but that we're staying connected in relationship is not a surprise by any stretch.
But isn't it amazing how we met? I was the pizza guy, and I've got our cookbook here, and that's how I met. And in God's infinite wisdom, I first married my wife, which I claim that she saved my soul. And the second part of that is meeting you guys years and years ago, doing the cooking classes, coming down for Thanksgiving, being part of that and seeing what real life is all about. It's about growth and about contribution as well. So for me, it's an honor to have you on here. And if you told me 5 years ago, I'd be doing a podcast with Friars, I'd be like, you guys, you are nuts.
Yeah, perhaps Julia saved your soul and maybe you saved my life. Because I entered back in 2009 when you were giving us our cooking classes and you taught me how to use a knife and kitchen safety. So who knows? Who knows what would have happened if we didn't have that class, right?
So let me ask you real first question that I have. It's a beautiful story in the book that you were afraid of singing and you never sung before and you had to sing in front of the Friars. And ironically enough, our whole family is into opera right now. So if you'd like me to sing the Salve Regina, I can sing it for you. But I was afraid like you and really getting over that fear. Can you share that story with us?
Yeah, of course. So I tell this story because it's true. So I'm from Southern California and I moved out to New York to join the Friars. And my whole life, I was basically an athlete. And I played sports and I was always on the field. As we look back right in our lives, like I was doing what I was good at and I wasn't doing what I wasn't good at. And so I was introduced to this to the Franciscan Friars of the Renewal. I moved out, I joined the brothers, the community. And one of the things that we do in our time of prayer in the chapel and that we all have to do is sing. And sometimes you have to lead singing. And I entered when I was 24. And for the first 24 years of my life, I didn't sing at all. I didn't even sing to the radio because I knew it sounded bad. Like I'd never done this before, and so all of a sudden it's my turn to lead some song for the first time. And again, I've got all of these brothers, these guys who I respect, who I want to admire me, who I want to like have see my good side and all that sort of stuff. And I have to sing. And I don't know if you've heard like a guy sing who's not a good singer, especially somebody who like
yes,
kind of wants
have.
To be tough. It's not attractive and it's not tough, right? And so I remember just like the sweating, the restricted breathing, all that sort of stuff. And it was a total, in some ways, a total failure. But looking back on it, it's like, I was very open to the idea that I'd never really had to do anything in front of other people that I didn't want to. Mm-hmm. But also I received kind of that experience of like, cause if I get straight A's or I make an all-star team and people are like, yeah, good job. It's like, okay, cool. That's like one level of love and affirmation. But when somebody like stays close to me and connected to me, when I like do something stupid or that I'm not good at, like it's the experience of love that is mercy. So it was just a much deeper experience of fraternity and community.
You know, Father Mark Mara, that is the power of the community and family, is that when we do mess up, we don't know how to do something, you know, we assume everyone's like laughing at us, but no, they're not. And most of the time they're not, unless, you know, you have my husband as your husband, but it's important to know that the family, the community that you're around is so important. And so who are we around? Who's our community that we hang with? Who's our family? How are we being a mother, you know, to our children who are messing up constantly? Are we encouraging them? Are we lifting them up? Are we giving them singing lessons if they stink? You know what I mean? That's so important. And that's one of the things that I want you to talk about a little bit, is your community that you live in and how you all support each other and pray for each other and how similar it is to the family life.
And I think I'll kind of go in and root it real quick in a concept in Habits for Holiness in the book. There's a very popular phrase thrown out. It's a lot in kind of like, basically it's the statement from Dostoevsky that beauty will save the world, right? Mm-hmm. And I come across it a lot within like the Catholic world of artists. And it's a romantic thing to say, like my art, my beauty, this thing that I do, it's going to save the world, this quote. But like, we just kind of have to flesh it out a little bit. And my proposal is the expression of beauty that is family will save the world, that family is actually what's going to save the world. And so they're not necessarily opposed, but it's the beauty of family, the beauty of a place where we can be seen and known and loved, where we can have a deep responsibility and commitment to one another. Like this, at least for myself, is the most deep desire of my heart, right? Like Sistine Chapel, great opera, painting, sculpture, whatever it is. Okay, awesome, beautiful. It has a part to play, particularly in bringing people to God and awakening their souls. But it's at the service of communion. It's at the service of relationship. And ultimately, like what I want is family. What I want is this really deep, ongoing place to love and be loved.
Wow, that's why I loved having you guys at the house all the time, because it was like a family. It was a communion. You are part of our peer group. We are looking up to you as the group. And I always felt like that great feeling to have you all around. That's always been the lasting impression for me. But I need to ask a serious question. From basketball player to postulant to opera singer to author, how did you become an author, and why did you write the book? What was the inspiration for writing the book?
Yeah, all of the stuff that I've done kind of with media, including the book, it's always been kind of God duping me, essentially. Like it was never like this planned thing that I'm gonna do. It just kind of somehow I always ended up happening. And so over the years, I've developed a relationship with Ascension Press. I do a weekly video with them on their YouTube channel called Ascension Presents. And they basically pitched me the idea of doing a book on simplicity, which it's like really kind of like a popular thing with like a minimalism life, or I think her name's Marie Kondo, this kind of like minimalist, like just people are experiencing the burden of stuff. And they're trying to navigate what they do with it. So the idea was like, okay, you're a Franciscan, you're poor. Like, can we write a book about it? I was like, well, I mean, maybe, but probably not a whole book, but maybe a chapter. And so what the book became is basically this. It's like families, individuals, we can look into the world and you can see kind of the craziness. And I think particularly for parents, there can be this question of like, how am I going to raise my kids with good values? How are they going to be, how are they going to be good Christians? How are they going to like really survive this mess? Like, is it even possible? And I think one of the great gifts that God has given to my own community, the Franciscan Friars of the Renewal, is we started in 1987 in the South Bronx, when the area itself had the nickname of Fort Apache because of the violence and the drugs and all that. It was a mess. But this is where God called us, and he invited us to begin this life of prayer and of community, of service. And we were actually able to really flourish. Mm-hmm. And so taking the, hey, you know what? It's like, we look at the world and feel like the whole world one big Fort Apache, and you might not be wrong, but holiness is possible. Healthiness is possible. Growing in virtue is possible, but it doesn't happen by accident. And so the book is supposed to be kind of an offering of encouragement and hope, but also instruction on how to do it.
Can you give us a little bit of instruction? Because I'm a little hard-headed. I need a little bit of help here.
Well, it's frustrating. And I know as a mom, I could talk as a mother that, you know, life gets in the way sometimes and things come up. Little kids need you right now. And so that
and
prayer time, yes,
too.
That's right. The prayer time, it's not what like it was when you were single, when you didn't have those responsibilities. And so over the years, I had to figure out how to change that. And your book really is helpful with that. I read it and I picked up so many amazing tips and I really appreciate that. And I think a lot of the listeners will get a lot out of this because it's just simple, small steps. So tell us about that. And that's really what it comes down to.
Yeah. And the first kind of concept, the sort of way of approaching it, the disposition is that we want to have a strategy, which is at the service of our sincerity. We have a ton of people in all walks of life who want to grow, who want to change, who want to do better, this, that, and the other thing. And they've had that sincere desire for years, but actually the change hasn't happened. And my proposal is that the problem isn't on just the level of sincerity, but is one of strategy. And so first of all, okay, let's have a game plan. Let's go about this intellectually and intelligently and intentionally. And so like step one is have some sort of plan of life, have some sort of goals, et cetera. And that works for following Jesus. That works for building a business. That works for, if you look at anybody really who's successful in kind of a general sense, like Tom Brady, for example, he's got a strict diet, practice, film routine, all of that sort of stuff. If you're going to be successful, you want a plan of life. That's true for the development of the human person and the disciple as well. A life rooted in prayer, absolutely. Like that's the source. We can't just go about this life without the Lord, and we're not supposed to really thrive. And maybe a second one, I think the whole book kind of offers different parts of it. But the second one is this, is back to the community question. You're not supposed to do this alone. If you're trying to follow the Lord, if you're trying to go against the stream and you're not supported by other people, like, you know, like the sheep that kind of leaves the flock is the one that gets picked off by the wolves. Like we're meant like essentially discipleship life. It's a team sport. It's meant to be a communal activity.
So I'm going to go into the business realm for like 30 seconds. Would you allow me to?
Love it.
Okay. So for us, we talk about the 100-year mindset. We've created the 100-year real estate investor, and to have the 100-year mindset, our decisions are going to affect our children's and our grandchildren. So that's the very first thing. We need to think long-term when we're buying an asset. In real estate, we need to think in decades, not what it's going to do for us in 6 months or a year. And that's very difficult for a lot of people. So Father's advice is truly spot on. And I love that strategy at the service of the sincerity. That is really cool. Tell our listeners, our listeners of the Jake and Gino community, they are so giving of their time, of their treasure. Can you give us some examples or some ideas on how to help the poor and how to help those that are less fortunate than us? You know, I was fortunate to find you guys. And I've also been working with a company called Second Harvest of East Tennessee. They're a food bank. They're amazing. I've been working with the orphanage down in Honduras as well. But like Julia said, a lot of people are too busy and they think they just need to give money. Maybe it could just be time or even a smile. Let me give you an example, Father. When we go down to Thanksgiving every year, we go down there. And we make the sacrifice to go with our family. When we're there, just the communal aspect of it and just the smile that we bring to the faces of all the people there and to acknowledge them, that's priceless because most of these people are not even looked at. They're not even cared for. And to be able to spend time with them, to me, is one way of giving back. Do you have any other ideas you could share with us?
Sure. I'm going to give it an answer kind of like my dad used to give when I would come asking for help with a math problem, right? Like I'd come like, hey, I just need help with number six. And then we'd like go back to the basics of addition and things like that. And it would take 45 minutes and I'd hate it, but I understand now. He's trying to actually like help me figure things out. And so I think the answer to the question, if you'll let me go back, it's not like where we want to begin is basically who are we to one another? Like the answer actually to what we can do for the poor, first and foremost, like it's going to be most fruitful when we remember that we belong to each other. And so this is again, that idea of family. The idea of family isn't just like the immediate nuclear family that we think of, but it's this understanding that we all share a common Father. We all share a common God, and therefore we're all brothers and sisters. And as I am deeply committed to my sisters, I'm deeply committed to my cousins who I may like see once every 5 years, like I'm committed to them because they're my family, and that's what family does. And so if we can try and cultivate, again, that disposition towards our neighbor, that is going to, I think, help us really kind of make some of the tough giving or sacrifices that are necessary. And to share an example, I think, from our own life where this really set in is, so I've worked at a homeless shelter. We have a homeless shelter in the South Bronx, and I worked there for a number of years. We have about 35 men who are with us. And people ask, like, hey, what's going on? Like, why does somebody end up there? And maybe they probably generally assume it's a substance issue. And there certainly is that. Like, we have guys who come in there with substance issues, but some of them just lost their jobs. Some of them came from other countries. Some of them, it's some sort of mental thing. There's a pretty wide variety. But one thing that they almost always have in common is that they have broken families. They have broken families. And I think pretty much no matter what I did, pretty much like I would never end up in a homeless shelter because I had such like a huge safety net in family. And I guess there are, you know, and that really is the most common reason that somebody ends up with us. And so our job as the Franciscans is to be that family, right? Like we're brothers and they're our family. And so while their natural family may be broken or may not be able to help them, like we're going to step in. And so I think that's what like living this family thing in action looks like. I can get a little bit more practical, but do you have any questions or comments on that first?
You know, I have a little story that I want to add, and then you could jump back in. When we moved to St. Augustine from New York, we came down here, which was a huge move with our six kids, and we literally knew no one. And we came, you know, we have a huge family, both. We have Irish and Italian, gigantic families, extended families, people that we thought were cousins, but aren't, you know, we had the Friars, which were part of our family. I mean, we would have dozens of you over every weekend. And we came from that rich home of just love and laughter and food. And we went from that to no one. And it was such an eye opener for me because that's what I was used to. Just like you said, 100% used to, where it wasn't even a question of Christmas came, are we going to have family over? Of course we are. And when we moved here, the first Christmas, the kids and I were like, oh my gosh, what did we do? We don't know anyone. Like, it's just going to be us. And even though it was just the family, we have, there's eight of us, which is a family to some people. That's a big extended family to some. We felt so lonely and it was so interesting. And so over the year, we started inviting over people that we met that we didn't really know and realized that they didn't have family here either. And all of a sudden it became, I realized that family is not just who you were born into. It's beyond that. It's something more than that. And God puts people in your life that you need and that they need. We make a difference in people's lives, but other people, huge impact. And that's something that really stuck with me. And I'm so happy it happened looking back because I needed to experience that to understand it.
Do you mind if I make two quick comments on what you said? Because it was very impactful for me. My mom and dad both came from Italy. And back in the 50s, 60s, they were poor. They had to grow their own crops. But it was amazing the power of family. They could always go down the street and borrow a loaf of bread from somebody, or they can get some broccoli rabe, they can go pick them. But it was that family commitment that none of them were homeless. They all had a home. They may not have had a lot of money, but they had somebody to lean on to really look for and get that help. And you know, when they came over here, they didn't understand. You know, my mom was 14 years old. She either could go to high school or get a job. She went to get a job because she needed this support and help the family out. The family was always there to help each other out. And that I totally agree with you. That's one thing that is lacking in our society. And that's why one of the reasons why I created the Jake and Gino community is because I wanted to create a business where I was quote unquote, one of the figureheads, and I could lead by example, where I really love my employees, where I show my employees that they're part of a community. They're part of something bigger. We create multifamily entrepreneurs. That's what we're doing. But we're also creating a community of like-minded individuals where they can work together and they can see that there's an example and they can see that family is really important. And it is a team sport. Multifamily real estate investing is a team sport. It's about community. It's about working with others, but it's also about empowering those people and saying that, hey, family is the most important thing. And that's what we need. And I want to be that example to others to say that, he's got a great family. Look what he's got. He's got six kids. If he can do it, then I can do it. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And if I can get into kind of the nitty gritty real quick of like working with the poor, serving the poor, what that looks like is, I'm able to kind of get into it a little bit more in depth in one of the chapters in the book, but I want to look at just kind of two things. Like, first of all, I think we want to reframe a little bit what it means to talk about working with the poor, because we basically assume always like soup kitchen or homeless shelter, things like that. And sometimes, and that's good and it's necessary, but sometimes there's like a bit of bureaucracy involved with that. Like, you have to make these calls, you have to maybe like fill out some form, do an interview. The times that you can help are limited. And so sometimes there's enough kind of obstacles along the way that initial like inertia ends up getting quelched and you end up going nowhere. So one of the first steps I would say to somebody if they wanted to like put this into practice is really like get out your phone, look at it. Who's somebody in your phone who could really use a phone call? Mm-hmm. Who's somebody who might be alone? Who's somebody who like just doesn't have a lot of people looking out for them that I can just call, make a 20-minute, 30-minute call and make all the difference in the world in their life? Like, I think that is like a great way to start and to put it into practice. And then number two is, this is a little bit, again, the strategy at the service of sincerity, is one of the reasons we don't do what we want to do is because our inertia is like, we're just going in one direction so quickly that we don't always have the space to be creative and to make some different like changes in our lives. And so I would say like, hey, can you, for the next 2 weeks, can you schedule like a 30-minute period of time where you're going to think about, pray about how you want to work to serve the poor better? It can be by volunteering and doing something in that way. It can be by giving, but just create like some sort of space to think about it. And again, maybe do it twice and then put it into practice. But if it's just like an idea that's on the back burner, chances are like it's never going to go anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree with that. We have a lot of great ideas, a lot of great thoughts, and they stay there.
Wait, time out. Her great ideas, I'm the implementer. She's got these grand ideas. Hey, Gina, I was thinking, when I hear those words, that's the word of death. Gina's going to have to start doing
good
stuff. So yeah, they're great. I love them, but you're the visionary.
It's
I'm
funny.
The implementer.
Yeah, I know. We have great ideas all the time, and we want to do good. I think we all are naturally trying to do God's will, but we get in our own way. And one of the things that I've learned through life coaching is write everything you're thinking about down, write it down, go back to it later if you want, but get it out of your head because it's just going to sit there. It's not doing any good. Just wasting your thoughts is not going to be doing anything. Write it down and look at it later and say, you know what? That's really great. How can I do that?
And make sure you show it to Gino.
Share it with someone. And that's where the community comes. Share it with someone. Do you think this is a good step for me? And talk to someone that's wise. Talk to someone that is, you know, that has the same beliefs as you in a sense and is encouraging, because we need that. We need that person to encourage us and to walk us through as well.
Father Mark Meredy, how do you keep your encouragement up? I mean, you're in the South Bronx, you're surrounded by poverty, you see a lot of strife, especially the last 18 months. Sometimes there's no hope. Mm. How do you garner that hope and how do you garner that encouragement? Because you need to stay positive. You need to be filled with energy and you need to be filled with love to continue along.
Yeah. And this is one of the things, right? If somebody kind of knows our life to some degree, often the first thing that's going to strike them are like the poverty, the simplicity, the places we live. It's going to look like, oh, you guys have made like a real lot of like sacrifices, and to a certain component we have, but it's an incredibly privileged life. And one of the privileges that I have is where I live in Harlem right now is I live with 20 of the best men I've ever met. Right. And I live with these guys who are praying, who are generous, who are sacrificial, who are like really kind of heroic in their witness. And it's like, I receive so much hope from my community. Mm-hmm. Like, and this is again, part of the idea, like the fruit of community is not just to keep me from getting beaten up from the wolves, but to have some support in a place where I can joke, some guys I can play basketball with, some guys who can encourage me and really inspire me by the witness of their lives, right? Like so many people, their news is very external and it's like 90% negative. Like the news, the good news being preached in my life by the people who I live with is like 95% positive. And so that is certainly a huge source of encouragement. And of course I pray, like ultimately our hope is in the Lord. And I have total confidence that he's with us and he's in it and that he's able to bring good out of anything. And so that's also, of course, by praying, I'm tapped in to the grace of that supernatural hope.
Father, should ask you this a lot sooner, and I never heard the story from you. What did your family say when you decided to become a postulant?
Yeah. So again, from Southern California, Orange County, kind of a country club kid.
Yeah.
My dad's a pretty solid, successful attorney. And so that whole thing. So we're talking about a very big, very big change. And the first conversation I had about it, things happened pretty quickly. It was freshman year of college. It's pretty funny. I'll share the story. This girl who I'd really liked for a long time, like I'd been pursuing her She's kind of out of my league. It was like the first day she told me like she liked me too, basically. But it's like, we're friends. I don't want to mess it up, blah, 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 this and that. So she tells me this like one night, the next night we're going to talk about it. So that's what I'm thinking about all day. And at some point I just hear this, like, I hear the Lord say this like kind of little thing that I'd never heard before. It's like, you need to check out being a priest. I was like, I mean, that doesn't make any sense. Like, this is just not the time. And so that night I'm talking with this girl. And again, it's basically like, hey, I really like you, you like me, but we've been such good friends. I don't know if this is the next step. And I just said like, hey, you know what? I think that's okay. I think I have to check out this priesthood thing. And it was like totally random. And the idea was, okay, I'm going to go check it out. I'm going to check that box. They're going to be like, no, thanks for coming. And then we're going to, in 2 months, I'm going to be back here and we'll kind of begin our life together. But that was probably at 9 o'clock at night, maybe on a Monday night. And I reached out to my parents. I think I sent like a text message like, hey, can we meet tomorrow morning for breakfast? I want to talk to you about something. I don't know what they would have thought that was going to happen. Right. Like, not a good move. I could have like set, you know, cause they're going to bed worrying about what we're going to talk about the next day. I wouldn't have done it that way now, but we have breakfast. I share with them what I'm thinking about. And basically it was, hey, my dad was like, hey, this isn't what I would have chosen for you, but I'll support you in anything. And it was just like, all right, you're 18, you're 19 years old. Like, just take your time with it. And so they were honest, but they were very supportive. They spoke some wisdom into it about like taking my time. But it's hard. It's hard. Like, they had dreams for me as well. And these dreams were going to look different. Now, fast forward the tape again, that was about 18 years ago. I mean, they love it. They love the brothers. There's a picture of me with a couple of the guys, like on the mantle, you know, it's, as they've seen how I've kind of thrived and been loved by the brothers as well. You know, like what else do parents want for their kids, but for them to be thriving, you know, and happy and in a healthy environment. And so it's really been a blessing to everybody involved.
That's very important, because we just did a podcast with a couple. They're actually brother, sister, Bill and Bev. And they talk about giftedness, and they talk about, this is for all you parents out there, because this is extremely important. Your child is a person. They're not a product. So the average Orange County attorney would have told Father Mark Mary, no way, you're going to become a lawyer. And that would have brought him down a bad path, wouldn't have been following his heart. As in the book, The Alchemist, you're not following your personal legend. That's very hard. And then people have midlife crisis. So for all you parents out there, do what Father's parents did. You can struggle, you can yell at, I'm sure there's a couple things flying around that house and like, you're crazy, but at the end of the day, he was supported by his parents, and his parents knew that they had raised a great child, a great son, and that he had the wisdom, the intelligence to go for it. And like they said, he was only 18 years old. He was exploring the option. One of two things could have happened. He could have said, no, I don't want to go there, or yes. And he chose yes. And here we are today.
That's one of the, I think, a big challenge for parents. And I'm sure, and I've talked to a lot of the Friars' parents, actually. So yes. I know this is true, is that we do have these thoughts and these dreams for our kids. We see their gifts. We see what they're good at. And we have all these plans for them. You know, my husband struggles with, Sophia, this is what you need to do. And he like starts naming off her whole life, basically. Hold on a second. That's great. You have an idea for the kids, but it's not your life. You have to hand it over and let them figure it out at some point. And sometimes we don't agree, and sometimes we're scared for them, or maybe we don't understand it. And that's the moment where you find out and you do understand by a conversation. So important. I want to get back to the family life for a second. You did, on page 21 of your book, you mentioned the 3x5, and it's five reasons to give thanks. And this is something maybe we could do with our family at nighttime prayer, or something where we think of five things during the day. Tell us about it. I want to hear it from you.
Sure. And this is something, right, in kind of Catholic prayer tradition, there's the idea of an examen, which is basically a moment of time set aside generally each day, each night, to just kind of look about your day, what you did well, what you didn't do well, where God was, and then kind of like ask for some graces for the day ahead. And again, this is kind of that strategy, is like, all right, like from morning to the middle of your day, a lot has happened, and you might've had all of these goals and these ideas at 7:30 or whatever time in the morning. And those are totally, totally off your mind. And so like just a little check-in in the middle of the day to remind yourself of like what you're doing, to reorient. And so it's a 3x5 exam. And the idea is like, we're going to think about three things. Number one is like, we're gonna, three sets of five. Like, okay, so number one, is there any way in the beginning of my day where I failed, where I sinned, where I made some mistakes, where I chose the low road. All right. I see those. I'm sorry. Like, help me out, Lord. Mercy. Number two is, all right, what are some areas of gratitude, some areas of success, some areas that God has showed up? All right. I did good here. This is this. Here's God provided. Beautiful. Thank you, Lord. And then second part of my day is like, what are five things, five difficult moments, five areas where I'm going to want God's help? Let's go ahead and look for them. Let's ask for God's help and then kind of go into them with a little bit of, with that extra kind of natural intentionality, but also having reached out to God for his help.
No, I love that. And I think that as a parent is so powerful to teach your children, because so many of these things we lacked as children. You know, we didn't learn a lot of this. I'm learning a lot of things now as an adult, which is fine. It's a good time, but we're raising these little people into adults. We're sending them out into the world. And all these little strategies that we're talking about, all these habits for holiness, that is going to make a huge impact on them and other people around them. And that is one of our huge goals as a parent.
My last question before we wrap things up, how do you have faith touch everything?
Yeah. And that's the goal. That's the goal, is just like to have the realities of the Lord, the reality of a faith, like they impact our whole lives. And for me, my big obstacle to actually following Jesus was this idea, basically like this, well, like a false sense of well-roundedness that like, okay, I'm going to do some good church things. I'm going to help the poor. I'll go to mass on Sunday. But at the same time, like, I'm going to go like celebrate and party like everybody else does. And so that's like thing, like there's certain things which I was going to do that I wasn't going to allow my faith to influence. And so I think the first step is like, if you're honest and sincere about actually the faith and the truth and who Jesus is, it's a truth and it's a reality which is meant to and naturally does impact your whole life. It impacts how you treat other people. It impacts how you spend your money. It impacts how you treat your body. It impacts how you interact with society or politics, all that sort of stuff. Like the faith and relationship with Jesus, it's meant to trickle down and to touch everything. And it's going to, as long as we give God permission. And so the idea is, all right, like I'm Lord, like, and we can begin, we don't have to do it all by ourselves, but it's like, okay, Lord, here's an area of my life where I'm struggling. Here's an area of my life where I have this kind of bad habit that I'm holding on to. And it's a bit of a crutch and I know it's not a good thing. And I haven't really talked to you about it or looked at it. But I'm going to, Lord, can you help me? Just, can we have begin a conversation about this? Like, I'm willing to talk about rooting this out of my life. It's kind of scary, but I'm willing to have that conversation with you. I think that could be a good step for a lot of folks.
That's a huge step. It's that awareness of what you want. And I wonder too, if a lot of people don't do that because they're afraid. They're afraid, well, I don't want to break that habit. It's too difficult, because habits are hard. And it's just those little tiny steps. It's that little conversation. Oh, I love that.
Father, where can the listeners get a hold of you?
Yeah, so Franciscan Friars of the Renewal, franciscanfriars.com is a great place to learn about more of the community. I have a weekly video on Ascension Presents, which is on YouTube. A couple of the friars, we have our own podcast, the Poco Poco podcast, which is a lot of fun for me to be able to do. And then lastly, if they want to get the book, it's at ascensionpress.com/holiness.
Do you mind if I give a little wrap up here?
I love
here?
It. No, go ahead. I love your wrap ups.
Okay.
You do.
This is going to be a fun one.
All right.
18-year-old basketball player meets the love of his life and says that she is too good for him. I know how you feel, because I have those same feelings when I met my wife. But he has the voice that he hears that he's called to the priesthood, and he wants to share it with his parents. And his parents probably struggling and saying that, follow your heart, you're still young, go through it. From Orange County, he lands in the South Bronx. That's a real dichotomy there. What a complete shift in life there. Becomes apostle in 2009, learns how to cook, right? And becomes a singer of all things, progresses through his life, becomes a priest, starts influencing others, writes the book Habits of Holiness. And right now he is in a closet. I have no idea where he's doing this podcast, but you know what? He just makes it happen. That's what it's all about. And it's continuing to spread the word. And it's not one of those things where you will go to hell. It's one of those things where it's about love, and it's about joy, and it's about mercy, and it's about community, and it's about family, and it's about faith, and it's about friendship, and it's about impacting others and helping others. And that's why I love being part of their community. That's why I love calling myself a benefactor of their community, doing whatever I can to help them out. And I got to get them down here to St. Augustine. I don't know how that's going to happen. Keep trying to get them down here, but you know, they like it up in New York. So I just you know, it's an honor to have you on here. I really enjoyed interviewing you and what your message is and what your mission is. Any final words?
Yeah, just it was great to be with you. It was really great to be with you. I appreciate it. It's great. Again, this is kind of what the family, church family looks like is we stay in touch. We care about each other and look out for one another. And so just grateful to have an excuse to reconnect with you.
That's right. No, Father, I just have to say, though, that you and all the Friars have made a bigger impact in the Barbaros family than you think. And it, you know, just being around you, your witness and your prayers. Wow. I mean, it's really huge. And I just want to thank you.
Amen. Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks, Father. Take care, everybody. We appreciate you spending time with us.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. In Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with privacy mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. In Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course.
Right again. Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is. Drawing Board or...
Miro. All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
For a limited time, visit Miro.com/brainstorm now and get a free business plan trial to unlock even more brainstorming tools like private mode and voting. That's Miro.com/brainstorm now.